States against King.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court, my name is Ajay Shah, and I represent the defendant appellant Brandon King in this matter. The first issue on appeal is that the district court erred in refusing to look beyond the fact of conviction in assessing whether the defendant's prior offenses are predicate offenses under the Armed Career Criminal Act.
If the judge had looked, what would have been found?
The judge would have found that there was a burglary conviction in the defendant's background. That burglary conviction was...
It was a burglary of a retail establishment, apparently.
It right? was, Your Honor.
And isn't that within the definition of generic burglary under Taylor?
It could be, Your Honor.
What do you mean it could be? Taylor says that generic burglary is the unprivileged entry of a building or other potentially occupied structure with intent to commit a crime. So entry of a retail store is generic burglary under Taylor. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think the facts
That's
could...
It's a matter of law. So what's the point of this? If the district judge had looked, the conviction is classified as generic burglary.
Your Honor, the defendant was charged with both retail theft and burglary. The defendant pled to burglary had probation, but they didn't actually explain. If we look beyond the fact of conviction, perhaps looking at the plea colloquy, we could have understood why he was charged both retail theft and generic burglary.
Why he pleaded to one rather than the other is irrelevant. He pleaded to burglary. The question under Taylor is whether it meets the definition of generic burglary, right? If the plea had been to entering a railroad car, for example, that was the Supreme Court's example, it would not have been generic burglary.
That's right.
But the plea was to entering a retail store. QED. I mean, it's just over. There's nothing more to talk about.
Well, Your Honor, because there was... Well, Your Honor, the issue as the defendant sees it is that there is one difference between retail theft and burglary, and that is... With burglary, one has to enter into the establishment.
Exactly. He pleaded to the burglary charge, not to the retail theft charge.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which means he admitted intent to commit a crime within. And that's part of the elements of the offense. This is really pointless.
Okay, Your Honor. Well, I'll move on to my second issue upon appeal, which is the sufficiency of the evidence. The defendant argues there was an insufficiency of the evidence, that because two of the fact witnesses who testified provided incomplete and inconsistent testimony, that no rational trier of fact could have found the defendant guilty, and therefore there was an insufficiency of the evidence. Three fact witnesses testified. The first witness, Ms. Williams, her testimony was inconsistent. She first testified that the gun in question was a little bitty gun. Those were her words. And then when the prosecutor held out a shotgun, which happens to be a 4-foot shotgun, then she said that was the gun. And she said she was certain that was the gun. Her testimony was riddled with inconsistencies. The second witness, Mr. Dick Vaughn, he did not identify the defendant in court. He simply said that the two people who entered his store were, one, a heavyset black man and a heavyset black woman, never pointing to the defendants in court, saying those are the people who actually walked into his store. The third witness, Agent Fritz, testified regarding the interstate nexus. His testimony also included that there was no fingerprint evidence on the gun. There was no there was insufficient fingerprints to make a match, but he never identified the owner of the gun. That information could be relevant had the owner of the gun had access to the car. There was no evidence raised. The aggregate of these three witnesses, incomplete or insufficient evidence, would suggest that there's an insufficiency of the evidence. This is similar, Your Honor, to United States v. Chirez in 1994, where this court held that there was no evidence saying that the defendant had actual knowledge that the gun was in a car that the gun was found in. In that case, the gun was found under the defendant's seat, and there was no other criminal endeavor occurring at the time. In our case, the defendant had the defendant's car. In the defendant's car, there was a shotgun on the back seat, wrapped in a coat, which was not visible, plainly visible. The police only found it after disturbing the coat and doing an inventory check, because the defendant did not have a valid driver's license.
He's the registered owner of the car.
He is.
It's 1 a.m. Nobody else is in the car with him, and there's a shotgun in the back seat.
Yes, Your
Pretty
Honor.
Tough case.
It is indeed, Your Honor.
I argue that the jury couldn't base a conviction on that kind of evidence.
Your Honor, there was no evidence suggesting that he knew the gun was in the car. The gun was not in plain sight. The gun was wrapped in a coat. It was not discovered.
Laying on the back seat of the car.
Yes, Your Honor, but it was not visible until the police disturbed it. The police did not know it was there until they disturbed the coat. Further, Your Honor, the defendant was stopped on a routine traffic stop. There was no evidence that he was going to or coming from another criminal endeavor. We think the governing case on this would be Chirez, where in Chirez the court made note that Chirez had not, that the defendant did not gesture toward the gun. There were no fingerprints on the gun. There was no evidence that the defendant touched the gun. There was no evidence that the defendant had actual or constructive knowledge or possession of the gun. The court found in that case that the mere fact that the defendant and the gun were in the same car were an insufficient basis for a fact finder to determine that the defendant had knowledge of the firearm. And again, Your Honor, in the immediate case, there were two witnesses who testified regarding the possession of the gun, but one of them could not describe the gun in court, went from it being, in quotes, a little bitty gun to a shotgun when the U.S. attorney held it out in front of her. And then the other defendant had not identified, the other witness did not identify the defendant in court. Your Honor, no rational trier of fact could have found the defendant guilty with the inconsistent testimony of Ms. McWilliams and the incomplete testimony of Agent Fritch, or the witness testimony.
You're into your rebuttal time.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Well,
thank you.
Not a question of apology.
Just call up if you want. I just want
it. I'll reserve time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Ms. Mullen.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. I'm not going to comment on the sentencing issue in the case unless any of you have questions about it. It sounds as though we've resolved that issue. With respect to the sufficiency of the evidence, I'll just make a few points about Chavez, since defense counsel says that that's the controlling case here. I want to make sure to point out that in Chavez, there were more than one occupant in the car. The defendant was in the passenger seat. The defendant did not own the car. He was not the registered owner of the car. He had not been driving the car. there was no evidence that the defendant owned a gun or had ever possessed a gun. Of course, here we have the defendant, as the court has pointed out, sole occupant, driver, registered owner. We did have other witnesses who put the gun in the defendant's hand and identified the gun as being the defendant's. Clearly, there was sufficient evidence here upon which to find guilt. Happy to answer any questions if you have them. Otherwise, I'll return the balance of my time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Shaw? Not much to reply to.
Just very briefly, Your Honor. Indeed, we do believe Chavez is the governing case here. Just very quickly, number one, in Chavez, the defendant did not gesture toward the gun. There was no evidence the defendant touched the gun. There was no evidence that the defendant had actual constructive possession, knowledge or possession of the gun. And this court held that the mere fact that a defendant, that both the defendant and the gun were in the same car is an insufficient basis for a fact finder to determine that the defendant had knowledge of of the firearm. Your Honors, thank you for the opportunity to be heard today. Mm-hmm. The defendant is asking that the court consider this for resentencing or a new trial. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shaw, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement. Our fifth case for argument this morning is United States.